Black excellence is global.
You are now part of the social experiment.
Welcome to Mastermind, the show where you learn to develop and master your skill from the best of the best. Here's your host, Mr. G.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Welcome to our monthly Black Thought University segment. I am here with the co-host, Professor Paul Robinson, and we are ready to start thinking. There are Black spaces all over the world that we know nothing about. Our guest today has spent her life traveling the globe, learning about, investing in, and collaborating with Black people in spaces all over the world. She's an award-winning diversity and travel consultant. She's the co-founder and president of the Black Travel Alliance. She's also author of the ABC Travel Green Book that looks into Black spaces, Black culture, and Black businesses all over the world. She's also author of children's book, Cheyenne and the ABC Travel Green Book. She strives to change the travel narrative by advocating for travelers that represent different demographics across multiple platforms. Through her ABC Travel Green Book, she's given Black people a roadmap that will assist us in being more comfortable while we travel, improving bad travel experiences, and creating opportunities for Black businesses all over the world to gain recognition and support. You can also find a dope interview of her on Mastermind Season 2, Episode 27. Let's welcome today the Queen of Black Travel, Martinique Lewis, to the program. Martinique, how are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm telling you, I'm like, dang, I wish that I, would just read maybe my bio to myself every day to remember all the things that I have done so that I can be, proud of myself. Because when you say it, it sounds so good. I'm like, yes, I did do that. I'm like, you know what? Yep, I did that too. So thank you, because it's a reminder to me that, you know what? This is Black girl magic. You're right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. And that we just touched the surface. I could, if I read everything that you were doing, we'd probably be here for 5 minutes for the intro. So
all good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. I'm just excited for people to listen to some of the work and wonderful things that you are doing. I know you took a break from the traveling because of COVID, and you took time to write your book and to get into some other things, but you are back traveling. I saw some Instagram stuff and you in Antarctica, and I think that's your seventh continent, right?
That is my seventh continent. Yes. It's so weird, because I promise you, I tell people how Antarctica was every day. And it's like every time I say it, I still have that long pause where I'm like, dang, I was really in Antarctica. It's one of those experiences that you get that is like mind blowing, that sometimes you're like, wait, did that really happen? Is that real? And then it's really funny, because when people are like, what is it like? You're like, water and ice. It's like, but
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Water and ice, right? And it's like, well, how many different days of water and ice can you do? And I'm like, 18, literally, because every day it's a different view of water and ice, water, ice, glaciers, whales, dolphins, penguins, just fur seals. It's just this incredible world that we're not even tapped into because we're not looking at it every day. But when you get to go there and you get to experience it, and there's fresh air and there's no bugs and no trees and no cars, and it's electric. It's magnifying. It's beautiful. It's mind blowing. It's just all of these things encompass Antarctica. But then when you experience it as a person of color or as a Black person, it's 10 times more amazing, because a lot of people who look like you have not been able to do this. But then you're proud of the people who have been able to do it before you and who have paved the way so that you could do it, right? You're proud to be on a ship where there's other people who don't look like you, who get to see people who look like you in this space right now. And then you're like, well, Black people should be marine biologists so they can work on the ship. Or, well, Black people should be engineers so that they can work on the ship. There's just all these things that go through your head. But on a scale of 1 to 10, and it was 11 for me, would I do it again? Absolutely. And like I said before, I'm just grateful to have been able to experience that. I'm the first person in my family to reach all seven continents. And this was a proud moment for me, for my family, for Black travel, for Black culture. And yeah, I wouldn't have traded anything for the world. People are like, was it cold? I'm like, it was. You know, it definitely was. But like I told them, Milwaukee was colder, New York was colder, because I was in Antarctica when it's technically, because it's technically the summer there.
Oh,
so I didn't
have
super, super cold temperatures. The water is very cold. But when you get off every day, you know, you might be experiencing, I don't know, 20, 10 degrees, but we're used to that in our winters, right? So it wasn't anything like, oh my God, I'm gonna, you know, my eyes, I can barely blink because my eyes are freezing over. But after you're out there for 2 to 3 hours, then you're definitely freezing, but it's okay. It's okay. You layer and you take your hand warmers with you and you just, you know, go through exploring different parts of places where you can land every single day. But it was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
That is awesome. Yo, I just got put onto hand warmers like literally this week. Those things are amazing.
Man, heaven sent, heaven sent.
So that is part of, I guess, the current places that you have traveled. Is there anywhere else you went recently since, you know, everything is opening back up? And then with everything opening back up, are there different things happening in the world of COVID and travel right now?
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily stop traveling during COVID. I thought about the other day and I was like, from March to July, I didn't go anywhere. But July 2020, I was back out here. So as you know, I went back and forth to England, where I now live. But then I was in Africa a lot, because you could still get to Africa and you could still really explore Africa. So I did Ghana and Nigeria a lot. But a lot of people did, you know, South Africa, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Nigeria, Togo. So I did Morocco. A lot of people did Egypt. So Africa was still open, which was really, really great for the continent because people had a place to go to. But on this specific trip to Antarctica, before we got there, I did Chile, and afterwards I did Peru. So even though I went to my seventh continent, I was able to go to my first world wonder, which was Machu Picchu, which I just thought that was like, gosh, you've only been to once. I'm like, you got a lot more traveling to do because you got more wonders to see. But all of them, you know, mind blowing experiences, all of them, you know, I was trying to seek out the African community in each of those spaces, which I was able to, which was another, you know, mind blowing thing, just being able to connect with people who look like you there. And thank God I speak Spanish to a point where I could actually communicate with them. But it's amazing to see us all over the world. It's amazing to understand how we got to these places. It's amazing to understand how we have directly affected culture in these places. You know, for Peru, for me, a lot of things that they eat is all from the Afro-Peruvian culture that you will eat when you go to just regular Peru. So it was great. It was really, really great.
That is awesome, man. I'm glad you're still doing your travels and documenting everything for us. As far as like, you know, people hearing you for the first time, I just want them to get a little bit of recognition with the amazing work that you're doing. So can you give us an introduction to your work as far as the Black Travel Alliance and then the ABC Travel Green Book and, you know, just an idea of what those things are and why those things exist?
Yeah. So my day-to-day is a diversity and travel consultant. And that means that I work with travel brands and tourism boards to understand how to market to inclusive communities online and how to understand our travel preferences and what influences us to go. If you can imagine, before 2020, nobody was really trying to hire me. Nobody wanted to talk about diversity. And it took, unfortunately, a man dying for the world to, you know, be an uproar. Then that's when everybody wants to work with me. And that's when I charge them triple because you didn't want to answer my phone calls before that, right? But I love what I do. It's a lane that I created for myself that is not a lot of people in there, but it's your way to make the mark on the travel industry. And with that, the Black Travel Alliance was started because we were so appalled when these travel, you know, companies posted that black square on June 2nd, 2020. And we were like, how are you posting this black square saying Black Lives Matter? And you haven't hired us. And when you do hire us, you don't pay us as much as you pay white people. And if you do hire us, we can't talk about what we want to talk about. You have to proof everything. And we were like, yeah, nah, y'all not getting away with this. So the Black Travel Alliance started to really hold the industry accountable, but also to be able to create a safe space for Black travel professionals. So that means Black journalists, Black photographers, Black videographers, Black content creators, and Black drone pilots. And, you know, since its inception, we're almost 2 years old. June 18th makes our 2 year anniversary. We've been able to do some amazing things in the industry, like give out over $100,000 in scholarships. We came out with the Pull Up for Travel campaign that showed the disparities amongst travel industry when it came to hiring Black people and how many Black people they had on their team internally. We additionally put out the Black Traveler Study. And, you know, in any industry, when you could talk dollars and cents and make sense, right? So we were able to tell, you know, the industry that African-Americans alone spend $129.6 billion in travel annually. And then even more so, we were able to now tap into the Black Canadian community, the Black British community, the Black German community, and the Afro-French, or, you know, Black people in France, that community, and be able to say how much they spent annually on travel also. So it's like, you can't ignore us, because now we're giving you, you know, these figures, you know, but we are also able to say, you know, Black people still prefer hotels over Airbnbs. We're able to say Black people are still going to Florida, Texas, and California in the drove loads. We're able to say Guatemala is a place that you'll see Black people in. Seychelles is a place that you'll see Black people in. So we're setting the trends. And I'm most proud of that work. And then the thing that I love the most about BTA is the history of Black travel timeline. I am always a Black travel geek. I would love to share Black travel history, because these are the things that were not put into history. These are things that you will not see in museums. So we were able to compile so many different things that tell our story on how we got to places like Peru, how we got to places like Colombia, how we got to places, you know, like, oh gosh, the list goes literally goes on and on. Sri Lanka, you know. And so with the history of Black travel timeline, we're telling people about those known unknowns, because they're known to our community, but not known to the wider community just in general. And so I love that program as well. And, you know, as time goes on, people can submit different things that aren't on the timeline. And we've been able to get so many submissions that just really, really tell our travel story. So I love being part of Black Travel Alliance. I am the president. Lord knows I didn't want that position, but that's okay. To me, much is given, much is expected. So I have another year in that position, but, you know, I'm super committed to the community. Right now we have a community of over 2,100 Black professionals. Anybody can be in the Black Travel Alliance, but especially, you know, if you're a Black travel professional, we want you to be a part of it so that you can get opportunities and income as much as you can. And we've been able to partner with some amazing people, amazing brands, to make sure that we're getting those opportunities. So that's the BTA.
That is amazing, man. And the Black timeline too, man, that goes back from to 1492, man. Like, so you cover a lot with that. So we're definitely going to get, you know, into that. But before we get into that, our last interview, you talked a little bit about Idlewild. And a lot of folks probably are not familiar with Idlewild. I know I read it, you know, on your website, so I found out about it. So you said you wanted to recreate Idlewild, like that was one of your goals. So can you talk about exactly why that is and why it's significant for Black travelers?
Absolutely. So during the Jim Crow era, there were tons of Black vacation spots that we used to have that were specifically for Black families, Black middle-class families. And Idlewild was one in Michigan. And I don't know, you guys might have seen the movie, but Idlewild was a place that was booming, you know, for Black families to go to in the summer. And unfortunately now, once segregation happened, right? And this is the whole argument, whether or not segregation was good, but once segregation happened and we were able to now go to the same areas as white people, Black people stopped going to Idlewild. Or, you know, the parents who owned the homes, they unfortunately died and their kids didn't keep up the home. So Idlewild died slowly. But I'm like, we should still have these spaces like Idlewild. And I'm like, I want to go back in, invest my money and build back Idlewild. But Idlewild is not the only one. You know, there's Chicken Bone Beach that was in, you know, Atlantic City. There's all of these Black spaces that are still technically there, but not infiltrated by us. And I'm like, if we just put our, you know, money and time back into these places, we could still have a place to call our own. And not that that's saying, oh, Asian people can't come here, Mexican people can't come here, white people can't come here, but they're significantly ours, right? It's something right. for us to be proud of. And these are places that I said Black families frequented. Not only that, but like the Black elite frequented, you know? Anybody from the Harlem Renaissance was at Idlewild. They were also, you know, down at the Dunbar Hotel in Los Angeles. They were also in, you know, Five Points in Denver, Colorado. So there's all of these spaces that are no longer booming with our dollars, with our love. But if we just put a little bit of love and care back into them, we could recreate them. So that's what I mean when I say I want to, you know, start back Idlewild. There's also a ski center, Lincoln Ski Center, that used to be there. And I would love to revive that also and start getting, you know, Black kids there so they can learn how to ski. So there's so many things in life I want to do, but you can mark my words, before the day that I die, I will revive Idlewild. I don't know if I got to call Oprah and Tyler and, you know, Sean, Puffy Combs, but we're going to do it for sure.
Yeah, man, I'll definitely be down over there, man. And thank you for, you know, bringing everybody's attention to that, because I think that there's a lot of history that's lost and that we don't recover back. So I think that's one of those gems that we get back now, and we realize that, yo, we had these Black spaces and they just disappeared, you know? So bringing them back, I think, is super important. So that's important work. Another thing I think that's important that you tackle is, sometimes when we talk about Black travel, people don't think that there are Black folks that are, you know, plus size or hearing impaired or visually impaired or, you know, that are in wheelchairs, and the list goes on and on and on. Muslim Black folks that are not accounted for. So can you talk about the work that you've done for, you know, people that have special needs and some of the issues when they are traveling that we might not generally think about?
Yeah, definitely. So we say it almost every day, I feel like, that Black travelers are not a monolith. So we don't fit under one category. And so we're not only, you know, making space for the Black traveler, but now we're making space for the Black traveler with autism. We're making space for the Black traveler who's blind. We're making space for the Black traveler who is over 60. We're making space for the Black travelers who are doing multi-generational travel. And I don't think people think about what people who look like them, but have a different ability than they have, what they go through. So for example, a plus size traveler, what they go through when they travel, a Muslim Black traveler, what they go through when they travel, especially if they have on any of their traditional wear, you know, a blind traveler, Black traveler, what they go through when they travel. So I always just try to make sure that everybody has diversity and equity at the top of mind, even when it's within a specific niche, like a Black traveler, right? So yeah, I advocate for that everywhere I go. I'm always giving keynotes about this, regardless of what space it's in. But I tell people even more so, like, it's also hyper-focused. Like, Black people love to do everything, but Black people who look like anything love to do everything. So yeah, I advocate for that as well.
Super important, super important. We all have family in all of those categories and friends in all those categories, but, you know, sometimes we forget to think about them. So I think that that is important work right there. Before we dive into people's questions, I really wanted to get into some of the Black spaces that we generally do not know about, that you're very familiar with, and just giving us some information about the culture or some of the history or anything that you've been able to accumulate as far as knowledge goes in these spaces. As far as like certain places, like, I know you're in London right now, and generally, you know, I went to England and I didn't really think there were a lot of Black people there. I did see quite a number, but I didn't think there was like a Black space there. And talking to you, like, there's a rich Black culture there. So can you elaborate on some of the, I would say, like England, Canada, in certain places that we just don't think that there are Black people there that have, you know, rich culture and just, you know, groups of Black people that are in there that we don't know about?
Yeah, so Black people being in London in general started around like the 18th century. And at that time, Black people were coming over here, but with their masters, essentially. London was significant in terms of abolitionist culture. So there was tons of abolitionists here. So a lot of times when African Americans were born free, they would come over to London to study. They would come over to London to speak out against the, you know, against the end of slavery. So Black people have been in London for a long time. But the boom came with the Windrush generation that some of you might have heard of, where the people of the Caribbean, Jamaican, to come over here and help build their railroads. And so Black people infiltrated places like Bristol and like Birmingham, or they say over here, Birmingham, but London specifically in Brixton, right? So that's one of the spaces people know where there are Black people. But additionally, London was very desirable to Africans in the 70s. So not only were you getting Jamaicans, you were getting Ghanaians and Nigerians. So when I say London is like New York or like Oakland, where I'm from, London is like New York and Oakland, where I'm from. It's Black people left and right, right? So traditionally, South London, where you have Brixton and Croydon and Peckham, those are places where you can find Black people. And then East London, like where I live in Southeast, but East London is also traditionally very Black. And you know, like I tell people all the time, that's why I was late today, because there was a Bob Marley exhibit that's only going to be here for another week, and they wanted me to come out and cover it. And I completely forgot about it. But like, there's so much Black culture here. And then they also have the University of African Studies here. It's called SOAS. And so you can track just African culture and African history all the way back to when it started here. One of my friends, his name is Tony. He does Black History Walks here. Just last week, I was speaking at one of his programs, because they do plaques around England or around London where they highlight Black culture in this actual neighborhood or in this space. And they have 15 of them now, but it like pays tribute to whatever Black person that was there and had like a really, really positive influence on culture. And so, the Black history here is very, very rich. You can see it all over central London, where most people go for London High Street. If you look at the statues, they're of Black people. You could take a Black History River cruise up and down the Thames, where they sold slaves, which a lot of people don't know. But yeah, it's bustling with history here. It's bustling with history, and it's bustling with Black folks. You ain't never gonna not find no beauty supply, no African restaurant, no Jamaican or Afro-Caribbean grocery store. You can find it all here, just like in New York.
That is amazing, man. I missed that part. Next time I go back to England, definitely get to that. I definitely, being from New York, want to ask you about information that you've gathered from about Seneca Village, because I know it's on your timeline. And even as New Yorkers, I think that's one place that we don't know that much about. So what have you gathered about that?
Yeah, I mean, Seneca Village, Weeksville. Gosh, why am I drawing a blank on the other one? There's three. But all places that were significant Black villages in New York, and super significant to the rise of the African-American middle class, right? Most of them were from the Episcopalian Church or the AME Church. And they were able to build these villages, right? And it was significant because in order to be able to vote, you had to be a homeowner. So they were building their homes in these spaces, and they built communities, they built their own churches, they built their own schools, and they taught, you know, their community all of the knowledge that they needed to know. And Seneca Village is definitely the most famous now because it is what we know today as Central Park. So you have every single movie, every single sitcom, you know, going through Central Park. And you didn't even know that that used to be a Black village that unfortunately got ran out because the government decided they needed to have something in the middle of Manhattan that kept the people from fighting. So they wiped all the Black people out. So when you walk through Central Park now, there is a Seneca Village trail you can go through and you can see where these actual places was. But, you know, it's crazy because this is one of the most beloved parks in America, right? And right there was a whole African town, or was a whole African American town full of successful Black people that didn't get any money, who they just came in and bogarted to build Central Park. So, you know, it was so funny because I remember the first time that I taught about Seneca Village on Instagram, people couldn't believe it. And I was like, well, believe it, because most of the places that we know now is exactly this story, right? The Black people were pushed out. We were there first, and we were unfortunately pushed out because the government had a different agenda. It's not propaganda, it's just facts, you know? But again, these are these stories that they don't tell you in the museums in New York. All these museums they got in New York. No, nobody talk about Seneca Village, right? It's like, how? Mm. How do you just miss a whole thing about a Black and thriving community? Because of this village, there were so many Black men who were able to vote. That's big, you know? That's extremely big. And people just would never know. They would never know. They would never know. So yeah, being able to not even uncover, but being able to amplify stories like that does my heart well, because Black people have been so progressive no matter what, right? We always make a way out of no way. We always find a way to uplift ourselves and to really, really create community, regardless of how many people want to uproot us. And Seneca Village is just, you know, another example of that.
And thank you for that, man. Great thing we have Martinique to give us information about places like that, man. Another one that I really found interesting on your timeline was Fort Mose, first free Black town. And it was in 1738. Before slavery even ended. So what do you know about that?
Well, there was a few of those also where slaves would escape or revolt and then create their own towns. So that was one of them. San Basilio de Palenque in Colombia is another one. And that was in all of America, all of the Americas, but the same story, you know, where slaves got tired. They're like, nah, we out. You know what I mean? And they fought their way and they created these spaces for us to be. Fort Mose is not there anymore, but Palenque is still there. So I always encourage people, when you go to Colombia and you go to Cartagena, take the Black History Tour, Alex Rocha, right? And he always say, let the Black man tell you the Black history. And he'll drive you the hour and a half up to the mountains and you'll be in San Basilio, where they still, you know, practice the traditional, you know, African traditions. And it's a thriving community still, you know, but these are things that, again, we don't hear about at all. And why not? Because that doesn't make any sense. You know, Allensworth, another all Black town that we don't know about, but was progressive in California, right in between San Francisco and Fresno. I used to go there every year as a kid because I grew up in the AME church, but that's why I knew about Allensworth. Think about how many people who didn't know. But again, you know, I can remember going to Allensworth as a kid and driving and asking them, what is that? And they said, oh, those are cotton fields. And in my head, I'm thinking, what? They still out here growing cotton. And it was this close to this, you know, free town. And this is the reality of places, even spaces like California, right? And it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. But yeah, there's so many towns like that. Africville, that's in Alabama. Freedman's Village, that's in Virginia. You know, all of these spaces that were traditionally Black, that were spaces for us, where we were thriving.
That is amazing, man. And going into just different spaces that you've mentioned, I saw Jean Baptiste that founded Chicago, Haitian individual founded Chicago. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I remember listening to that on Hidden Colors, but before that, I never even heard about that. Like, you know, a Black person founding Chicago, like, do they even talk about that in Chicago?
They do. There's plaques for him, but you know, it ain't no Christopher Columbus or, you know, the pilgrims came to, you know, Plymouth Rock. And it should be. It really should be. And this is the whole thing that I'm saying, you know, these are the greatest known unknowns. It's like, oh yeah, Chicago was found by what Black man? That Black man. Same thing with LA. LA was found by Afro-Mexicans. And people are like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's the reality of Los Angeles, y'all's favorite city. But again, these are not things that they decide to put out there so you would never know. But these are just straight facts, right? Mm. And that's why I'm like, if your favorite city was founded by Black people, you don't know, think about how much of this territory, right? Before any white person got here, was actually, and I hate to say discovered, because I'm like, you didn't discover nothing. Native Americans were here, but founded by, you know, African Americans or people of African descent. Right. So
I wanted to tackle two more places before we get into people's questions. So one place is definitely Brazil. I think we're starting to find out about it now, but generally when we look at Brazil on television and the media, you would think that this is predominantly light-skinned white folks that live here, you know, but it's one of the largest black places in the world. I think third largest, if I'm not mistaken.
Second largest
in the world. Have you been to Brazil?
I have not, but I'm going. I'm going. And it's always so weird. People said, why haven't you been to Brazil? And I'm always like, I don't know. That's a good question. I do not know. I have a lot of roots in Brazil, not me directly, but I have a lot of people on the ground in Brazil who can share the Black history of Afro-Brazilian culture. And I always tell people, when you look at the map, what's closest to West Africa? Brazil. So they literally just came from here and went there. So it was like, oh, we're taking them and went here. And that's why I tell people there's so many Black people throughout South America, because that was the route. If they could just go straight over, right? They went straight over. So you have Brazil, you have Guyana, you have Suriname. So that's why Venezuela, that's why. And even as you start to go around, Argentina used to be filled with Black people, but they exiled us out, right? But even when you go to Chile, even when you're still going to Peru, up to Ecuador, even where I'm from, Panama, they just went straight over, right? They went from West Africa, they went straight over to Panama for the same reason, for slavery. So slaves were taken, or people who were enslaved were taken everywhere, but specifically to South America, even more than they were taken to North America, even more they were taken to the United States. So that's why there's so many Black people there. But the Afro-Brazilian culture is so rich. It's so rich. And I tell people all the time, you know, don't let them paint a different picture, because that's not what it is. It looks like us, right? It looks like us. For this to be the second largest country that inhabits people with African descent, yeah, we should see more Afro-Brazilians on everything, and not just during Carnival, right? Because that's not the only times we're there. We coexist with everybody else, and that's real. And I mean, you can find us in most of the parts of you know, northern Brazil, but Bahia is where you can find us specifically. But we're still in Salvador, we're still in Brasilia, we're everywhere around the whole country. So yeah, I think I will put it on my list for this year. I need to stop not going. But yeah, I'll probably go for Afro-Brazilian Day. There's Afro-Brazilian Day at the end of the year, and there's also Afro-Argentine Day at the end of the year. So I will go around that time.
When exactly is that?
November.
November. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Got it. But like, Chileans just celebrated their, you know, Afro independence, or the Afro Chileans just celebrated in February. So everybody has their separate day. Afro Uruguayans have their separate day. Everybody has their separate day, because now they're just starting to be recognized as actual culture, I guess. You know, on the census, when you fill stuff out, they would never have Afro Chilean. They just added it within the last 10 years. So now they can definitely self-identify. And they do. They're proud. They're proud to keep their traditions going.
Super important. Super important. One last spot before we get into questions was Cuba. Yeah. I know there's a great deal of Afro-Cubans in Cuba. And that's another spot where I look in on television a lot. There's no, you know, you really rarely see Afro-Cubans. So have you been to Cuba?
I have not been to Cuba either.
See, I'm getting you today. I'm getting you today, man. Because usually when I mention stuff, you're like, oh, yeah, I've been
there. I can tell you, Afro-Cubans, you can find them in Havana. You can find them in Trinidad, Cuba. Again, the same thing. But when you go to Cuba, the majority of the Afro-Cubans came from Haiti and Dominican Republic, and they were brought there. You get a mix of some of everything, but they practice, you know, Santeria, as well as they practice the Yoruba traditions. So you'll go there, and there's a lot of sacred practices. My family is Panamanian, and they practice Black magic and Santeria. And at times they would go to Cuba to help heal people. My family was traditionally healers. My great grandmother and my great aunts, they were healers. So they would go over to Cuba to practice that. So we're always still intertwined somehow, whether it's through dance, whether it's through religion, whether it's through food. We're all still very, very connected, but it all comes from where we came from, which was Africa. So.
And the information, man, is, man, yet the knowledge you have about the world is like a million textbooks, man. thank you so much for just enlightening us on Black folks all over the world, because if it's up to us looking in the textbooks and looking on television, you would think that we are not in these places. And I'm glad that people like you are actually traveling in those places and speaking with people on the ground and finding out about Black cultures in these places so it can get back to us, so we can have a world vision of what the world actually is like and not what we're told that it is. So again, thank you for that, man.
Of course.
All right, I wanted to get into people's questions before anything. Before we get into everybody's questions, Professor Robinson, did you have anything before we get into everyone?
No, I'm fascinated. I'm just listening. I did have a couple of questions. So, I mean, whenever you're ready, I'll ask.
I'm ready.
First question. What's the vibe like in London? And why are you in London and not America? Is there, when I say vibe, I'm talking about in terms of racism, in terms of how Black folks are treated in that manner.
Yeah, so there is this unspoken complex that when you're African American, you get treated a lot better, right? And this is just anywhere you go. If it was out of me and a Nigerian, they're gonna treat me better, right? Because I'm American, even though we're both Black. Their racism is not overt like it is in America. Instead, it is very behind closed doors, hush hush. But ever since the Black Lives Matter movement, now you see Black people everywhere, right? On news shows, just everything. But I think the classic example of what it's really like is when England was qualifying and they were in the championship and the Black guy missed the goal. And then all of a sudden he gets called a nigger. And it's like, but you wasn't saying that when he helped you get there, right? He gets called a monkey, but y'all wasn't saying that when he helped y'all get all the way there. And so that is a classic example of what we are to them. Unfortunately, you know, we're good until we're not. But also the thing that I appreciate about England is that that's only a certain amount of people. That's not the people who are in the big cities. Those are the people who are in the outskirts, right, in the country. And when you come here, you see groups of people who do not look like each other, right? So there'll be a Nigerian, a Somalian, a Guyanese, a Ghanese, you know, a British, a Indian, and a Pakistan, a guy from Pakistan, and that's their friend group. So literally, it's always super, super diverse and super mixed. It's more of where you're from versus what you look like. So it's like, oh, those are guys from the East. If you go to guys from the North, right, it's going to be, you know, Jamaicans, Trinidadians, St. Lucians, Martinicans. And they're all going to be in a group and probably some type of Muslims, either from, you know, who might be from Afghanistan or, you know, Oman. And literally those are the friend groups. So that's what I like about London in terms of diversity. But they're very welcoming here. But again, that's in London. If you go out like to an area called Kent, you might get some stares like, what are you doing out here? So it just depends. It very much so depends.
My last question. Did you find many Black folks in Antarctica?
The Black people I found were penguins because they're half Black and half white. That was it. You know, nobody lives on the continent because you can't. So if there are people there, it's because they're scientists. But when I went, there was 16 of us. So it was like so refreshing because that's the first time they saw that many Black people, you know, at one time on the continent. But yeah, you can't live out there. So, but yeah, it is just pretty neat to be able to experience that with them. And during February, you know, it's Black History Month. So we had to sing Lift Every Voice and Sing every time we got a chance, right? You know, all our hoodies was Black this and Black that, and, you know, and I was proud of that, you know, it was a great moment.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Helen did ask a question that was answered. It was about the Black History Tour in Colombia. She wanted to know the name of the Black History Tour. Can you just say that to us out loud, the name of the Black History Tour?
It's Experience Real Cartagena by Alex Rocha and his family. And I could tell you, Cartagena is 70% Black because that is the port where the people who were enslaved were brought to. So you'll find the most Black people there, but there's also Black people in Medellin. And like I said, San Basilio de Palenque. But additionally, the culture, the Black culture, Black people thrive there. So there's Black-owned hotels as well, Black restaurants. And that's where the fruit ladies are, who are called Palenqueras. But again, they're from San Basilio de Palenque. But the Palenqueras, that's the people who people love to go and take the pictures with. I always love to call them by name because I say, stop calling them fruit ladies. Her name is Angelica, but they are awesome. They've always been awesome to me, and they definitely make their money. So that's a good thing. But yeah, he is from a small village called Rocha, but he lives in a part of Cartagena called San Francisco. And the reason why I love the Rocha family is because they have dedicated their lives to the people of this whole province of San Francisco. They have built their house up to also be a school where they're teaching kids English. They also have a church there. They also have a computer center there, a music center there, and they feed the kids there. So when the kids' parents are at school and, you know, they get home from, I mean, when the kids' parents are at work and they get home from school, they go to the center. So I love going there and just volunteering my time. I love going there and bringing clothes with me so that you can be able to give to it. Because these people, you know, they're poor. They don't know that they're poor because they have everything that they need essentially, but is because the Rocha family is so giving. So the way that he was able to make his money was through tourism. He taught himself English because our soldiers used to come there all the time and they would speak English. So he taught himself English and decided to start giving these Black history tours. And his family has become very, very well off because of it. So yeah, but that's my guy. Love him to death. And most of the, you know, Black travel communities, when they go to Cartagena, that's who they go with. So I recommend him to everybody. But there's also, you know, other Black History Tours, some everywhere. Jennifer Tosh runs the Black History Tour in Amsterdam. My boy Naki runs the Black History Tour in Lisbon, Portugal. I said before, Tony Blair, he runs the Black History Tour in England. There's NOLA Tours, that's the Black History Tour in New Orleans. There's the Gullah Geechee Tours that they just started now that you can even book on Airbnb. There's an Afro-Peruvian Tour that you can book on Airbnb. Like, we are out here, as I tell people, like, we're out here. Our history is out here. They just started the Afro-Argentine tour last year. It's been very, very successful, but you can go and do that, and that's through La Fonda Tours. So, yeah, there's so many different, you know, just African history tours that you can take from place to place. I adore it. I absolutely adore it.
Absolutely, man. And before I go anywhere, we listen to this episode and other episodes and definitely hit you up so I could know where everything is at, you know, where the Black folks at.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Do we have listeners tuning in right now that have questions?
I have a question. Out of all the places that you've gone, what's your favorite spot?
Yeah, people ask that all the time. You know, I told them London, and that's how I ended up here. I just have this love story with London. I went to school here, so that was my first real introduction to understand that Black people were outside of the U.S. and the Caribbean, like in large numbers. But I would say London, then Amsterdam. I love Amsterdam, and then Trinidad. I love Trinidad. I love carnival culture. I go to carnival every year. I'm like itching to get back this February because we haven't had carnival in 2 years. But I love Trinidad and Tobago. I love island life. You know, it's real nice to do island life, easy living, you know, where I could just go and catch my fish and then eat it, you know, got some fresh food. I could just climb the tree and get my coconut and that's that, you know. But I also enjoy all parts of Africa. Africa is just so diverse. You can get some of everything. You get the desert. You can get the jungle. You know, you can get the nightlife. You can get anything in Africa. You can get luxury, you know, all of that. The safari, like Africa is so rich with everything. And I feel like people really miss the opportunity to go and explore and experience Africa. So I always tell them, go to Africa. Like, before you do anything else, go to Africa, go home. If you've ever been to Ghana, I've never felt connected to a place like I felt connected when I'm in Ghana. Like literally, as soon as you walk off the plane, you're like, yep, I'm supposed to be here. So I love Ghana for that reason. Awesome. Then you walk around, you see people who you look like, and you're like, yeah, I was from this tribe somewhere. This is probably where I was from because these people look like my cousins and them. So yeah, but I also love Ghana. But there's no place that I've been to that I say I don't like. You know, my mom's always like, how was it? I'm like, oh my God, it was amazing. She's like, you say that about everything. I'm like, yeah, you're right, because it's amazing, right? You make travel for you what it is. If I go to San Leandro, California, from Oakland, California, which is 15 minutes down the road, I'm going to tell you San Leandro was amazing because I'm going to make sure it's amazing because I'm there, right? So it's all perspective.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Do we have anybody else? Other questions?
I have another question.
Let's hear it.
In terms of Great Britain, there are a lot of tours there, African tours there, aren't there?
Yeah, throughout it all. Like I said, Bristol is a place that Black people were. So there's a wonderful tour in Bristol, which is about 2 to 3 hours by train away from London. And Birmingham, the same thing. In Leeds, oh gosh, there's so many different tours that you could take here. And I don't think enough people take advantage of Britain. And then in terms of Scotland, you know, there's a huge Black population in Scotland. In terms of Ireland, there's a huge Black population in Ireland and Northern Ireland. So I tell people all the time, like you're saying, throughout all of Great Britain, like, take advantage of Great Britain, but not only that, the whole United Kingdom, you know, and what that really, really means. Because, yeah, I love it. I love exploring. And then, you know, once you're on this side, the plane tickets are so cheap, right? You're talking 17, 18 pounds, you know, to get to Greece or to get to Scotland or to get to Ireland, you know. So I always tell people, like, take advantage when you can to get to these places and go ahead and check out the community. I just did a whole Instagram story for St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, I don't know who St. Patrick is, but I can tell you where the Black community is in Ireland. So, you know, go here. And this is the Black on Hotel and this is the Black tour. And they have Barack Obama Plaza there, you know, where you can go and take a picture of the Barack Obama cutout. I'm just like, you know, y'all got to understand there are these places here for us. I just realized we didn't talk about the book, but I created a book called the ABC Travel Green Book, and it lists all this information so that it's all in one place for people to know, like, these are the Black brunches around the world that you can go to. This is where the Black community in Pakistan is. This is where the Black community in Greece is. This is where the Black community in Turkey is. These are, you know, the Facebook groups that if you're Black, a Black expat in South Korea, this is where you can get your hair braided or your nails done. If you're Black in Japan, this is the, you know, the Black professionals network that you can hook up with. And that's called the ABC Travel Green Book. And like I said, it was created in 2020. It's the same concept of the Green Book, but instead of doing it up and down Route 66, I did it on 6 out of 7 continents, because like I said before, nobody lives in Antarctica. But the whole goal of it was to bring Black culture globally together so that travelers knew where to find people who look like them when they're traveling someplace. And it's not only for the Black traveler, but it is a celebration of Black culture globally. So you can get it on Amazon. You know, every day I look on there and there's a different price because Amazon is, you know, taking the book down or up as they see fit. And I'm like, whatever, as long as you give me my royalties. But, you know, you can go on there and get it on Amazon. It's a paperback, or you can wait to the end of this year when the actual app comes out. People are saying, all right, we got the book, but what happens when we don't want to carry it around? And so we've been working on the app for about 2 years and it's just about ready. I'm ready to go ahead and release that. And then if you have kids, like he said in the beginning, I came out with Cheyenne and the ABC Travel Green Book. And that was to be able to teach kids about, you know, Black cultures around the world. And right now there's 1 of 5 out, but it starts in South America and it goes through, you know, all the Afro communities, African communities throughout Central and South America, actually, because I think our kids should know as well. So it's more than just February for me, you know, it's 365 days a year. So
now, do you give tours? Do you take people to specific countries? You don't.
No. And, you know, people always ask me, why don't you run a trip? And I'm like, because I don't want to have to deal with y'all. I'm like, listen,
it's rough.
I don't want it. I don't want 20 different personalities and people who don't want to walk and people who want to sleep in, you know, but I'll give you the itinerary and tell you exactly what to do. But no, I don't do any tours on my own. It takes a lot of patience to be able to do that. And I'm telling you now, I ain't got it. I ain't got it. So yeah, I like easygoing travelers, you know, where we don't always necessarily have a plan, but we know we're going to go find the Black people. You know, we're going to spend our Black dollars in these Black, you know, establishments. So, yeah, that's how I travel. But
Gotcha.
All right.
I have a question.
Yes.
My question is, what are some of the challenges you've faced while traveling? Just, you don't have to give us like a laundry list, just two or three things that you've experienced. And I love the fact that you talked about London, because I've been and I'm just did not like it. So now that you're speaking about it, it just makes me want to go back. Maybe I missed something.
Girl, so call just, me. Remember? Call me.
I'll call you. Okay, no worries. I'll give you a call. I was just like, I don't like it here. Okay.
Yeah,
but just some of the challenges you faced as a Black woman traveling around. Just you. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, like I always tell people, not only am I a woman, but I'm Black, right? So traveling, I'm a double whammy. And because I'm tall and skinny and, you know, I wear nice clothing, people think I'm a prostitute all the time, especially in Italy. Oh, I used to get stopped all the time. I remember one time I was walking through like just a small town called Trento in Italy. And this man just starts cussing me out. And I'm just looking at him because I'm like, sir, I don't speak Italian. I speak Spanish. So I can kind of make out what you're saying. And this guy came out of nowhere and he was like, leave her alone. I was like, what's his problem? He's like, he's asking, why are you here? Why is a prostitute here? And I'm like, prostitute? I was like, sir, you better be lucky I know what you're talking about, because I ain't no prostitute. He was like, because you're dressed well. So we thought that some white man gave you a money to be dressed like that. And I'm thinking, what? You know, but this is the reality of the situation. All they see when they do see Black women traditionally in their country, it's because they're prostitutes. So unfortunately, this is something I get. And then I told people I was in Iceland, walking, minding my business, and somebody screamed out monkey. And me being so naive, I'm still going about my business. Then like 2 minutes later, I was like, wait, were they calling me a monkey? And I was like, oh my God. You know, I'm so naive for the fact that they were saying that about me. And I'm just like, really? And I was just like, that's the best they could do. And I was like, well, hopefully they wasn't disappointed, because it didn't even affect me until 2 minutes later, because I didn't even realize they were talking about me. But it has happened to me in London one time also, not London, but outskirts. Again, like I said, when you go to the countryside, people out there tend to be more prejudiced or racist. And they drove by us and they made monkey noises. Mm-hmm. And we were like, and we turned around, you know, and I don't think they expected us to do that, and they sped off. So it happens, right? There's nothing that has been life-threatening or where I was scared for my life. But just recently, Gabrielle Union came out with a story about when she was in, you know, Croatia, and the neo-Nazis came into a place where they were at and told them to get out. So that's very much so the reality of traveling while Black. And that was, you know, part of the reason I wanted to put out the Green Book, because for us, it's about safety when we travel. That's the number one thing. How am I going to be accepted or welcomed or not welcomed as a Black individual? Are they going to welcome me? And you know, when I went to India, girl, I was like, I don't want to take no more pictures. They've never seen a Black person before. So they want you to kiss the baby, hug the baby, take the picture with granny and them. Like, and not only that, when you get done taking one picture, you think you're going, you turn around, there's a line of people waiting to take pictures with you. Or they'll come up to you and they're rubbing your skin thinking that the Black is going to run off. I'm like, oh, baby, it's there. It's there to stay. It ain't going nowhere, right? But you have to think about it. It's culture shock for them. So some people mean well. It's just, it's ignorance, but not ignorance because you're ignorant, right? It's just they've never seen a Black person. They're curious. And then some people is just ignorance. So you just got to, you know, watch your surroundings. And these are things that I give, you know, in the Green Book, when you get to each country, especially in Europe, I say, you know, this was my experience here. I'm not saying that this is going to be your experience, but like if you're walking down the street in New York, be alert and be aware of what's going on around you. And yeah, I say that all the time, but that's why I did the Green Book specifically, so you can find the community of people that look like you. If I'm in Greece and I feel uncomfortable, I know exactly where to go in Athens to find the Nigerian community, right? I'm like, yeah, no, I can go someplace where I see somebody who looks like me. So it just gives me that peace in my spirit that I'll be okay and that I'm safe here. So yeah, that is very much how the reality is of traveling while Black.
I'll be going to get your book for sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
A question, where can we find you on Instagram?
Yes, so on Instagram and Twitter, I am Marty_San Diego, like Carmen San Diego. And on LinkedIn and Facebook, I am Martinique Lewis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We had a question. Have you traveled to any of the Asian countries? If so, which ones? And is there one that you've enjoyed the most?
I've only traveled to Japan and India. But I go to the Philippines in about 2 weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I love Japan. I was in the fashion industry before I was in the travel industry. So I would go to Japan all the time for trade shows. And, you know, walking down the street, seeing a soul food restaurant, you're like, what the hell? You're like, I'm going in there because, yeah, I do want some fried chicken, actually, you know. I want me some grits. And then you're walking down the street and there's a whole sneaker store by some guy from New York. You know, I mean, like, it's crazy the way that Black people are expats. And they move to different communities and then they create their own community. And Japan was the same way. But I also just love Japanese culture in general, you know. I feel like they're the cool kids on the block. They can dress, they can dance, you know. They have the banging parties. So I would go to Japan a lot for Adidas. They would throw different parties. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to Japan for the next 4 days. They're like, for what? I'm like, the Adidas party. They're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, hi. So yeah, but there's also, you know, the Black anime studio in Japan. So yeah, there's definitely different cultures for it. I also loved India when I went. They look like us, right? They're literally as dark as we are. And that was refreshing because they saw you as a brother or as a sister, right? They didn't treat you like you were different. And I really loved that. But yeah, I'll be very interested to see how the Philippines are. I'll be in Manila. I don't know what other places I'll go, but I'll for sure be in Manila. And I'm ready to explore that. So yeah, but I definitely need to do way more of Asia than I've done.
How long do you usually stay?
Oh, gosh, it just depends, to be honest. I used to be in and out, but I told myself when it's stuff like Asia, I have to give myself at least 5 days. Because for one, it takes my body a long time to catch up. So I remember I went to Australia and I was there for 3 days. And before I could even come home, like my jet lag had never even reset, right? So it was nothing for me, but I was sleeping during the night. And I was missing everything. So yeah, I try to give myself 5 to 7 days.
Got it. Somebody mentioned that they were going to be heading to Canada soon and they weren't sure if there was any Black culture, Black folks in Canada. Like what's the situation down there or up there?
Canada's like London and New York. It's a bunch of Black folks. You're going to find Jamaicans and Trinidadians there. The island culture in Canada is huge, specifically Toronto, as you guys know, and then Nova Scotia is really big for Black people too. But Black people are everywhere around there, and they all speak French. So you know, it's now a different world of Black people. You'll find a lot of Haitians up there also. But yeah, Canada's filled with Black people, so many Black people, and they have tons of Black resources as well. You can find the Black owned businesses, the Black, you know, restaurants, all of that, the Black parties, all of that in Canada.
I went last time I went to Canada. I drove to Canada and.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool. There was a Trinidadian restaurant there and I had the best doubles I ever had in my life over there.
You just made me hungry and jealous all at the same time. I can't get good doubles anywhere but in Trinidad. I can't get good doubles anywhere.
Doubles in Trinidad, man. Now you just reverted the hunger, man. Man, that's dope. Anyone else with questions for Martinique?
I have one. Have you ever been to Ethiopia?
I have not. I have not been anywhere in East Africa, but I do hope to go from Tunisia to Somalia to Ethiopia to Sudan to Eritrea, all of them. I want to see all of them. Have you been?
Yes.
How was it?
I've been going there 20 years, except last two. And there's so, and I do tours of the historic route. There's so much to see, so much history.
Yes.
If you check on YouTube, there's a group of people that are, the name of their group is Unapologetically Nomads. And it's it's an American family that just a mother, father, and teenage daughter. They just left the U.S. and traveling all over the world. Yeah. And they spent a lot of time in various countries in Africa, but Asia and everywhere. So you could see their experiences. But also there's a young man from Tanzania, and he has been traveling, and he's a lot of videos of Ethiopia. He's just there now for like 4 weeks. And that's Swahili Nation. You can find him doing that work. There's a lot of history in Ethiopia.
Tons. I love that. Thank you for those recs.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. I know right now in London, it's like 12, almost 12:30, right?
Yes. I yawned twice and I was like, stop yawning. I'm so sorry.
Nah, it's all good, man. Late into the night. Thank you for coming through, by the way, man.
So, no problem. Know. Thank you for the invite.
Yes. Late into the night. So Martinique will be going soon. If we have any last questions, we'll be wrapping up. If you have a quick question that you want to drop real quick. All right. I think that sounds like everyone is satisfied. Martin, you did a real good job, like taking us all over the world today, man. Like,
great job. Great job.
Thank you so much.
One last thing before you go. You are pretty much an activist for the Black travel space and us seeing ourselves in some of these magazines, the brochures, and you know, one thing you mentioned was, you know, sometimes we'll see black men with a white woman, or lack of black families, and just different issues that exist within that space. And then also what you do too is you give the travel industry a letter grade every year from, you know, A to F on their efforts and what they do as far as black folks go. So let's say, in order for them to get an A, and in order for some of these issues to be resolved, what would be like the ultimate picture or the ultimate thing that you would like to see in the industry, and you know, for us in that space?
They're not gonna never reach an A, unfortunately. they're not even out of F's and D's yet, you know, and so it's a long road. But there has to be diversity in everything. Even with the report card, there's 8 sections, and this new one coming out, there's 12. But there's it's talking about diversity and everything. Well, I think the one way to change it is if they start hiring more people of color for their internal teams, right? Because when you have people of color making the decisions, right, the decisions are made for everybody, not just one type of person, right? And it'll reflect outwardly because of what it looks like inwardly. And so I think that's the biggest thing to do there, you know, hire black people, not only to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, though, hire them because they're good at what they do. So, you know, if you're having a conference, don't just bring me in to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, bring me in to talk about content creation, or bring me in to talk about, you know, how to create a timeline that, you know, marks history of African Americans. There's so many different things that I can do. I shouldn't just be limited to diversity, equity, inclusion. I should be, because that's what I do in, you know, in everyday life. But other black people should not be, because they're good at what they do. So yeah, I would just say they can start hiring diverse people, and that'll help change some things.
Right. And then what about like what you think black folks should do too? Because I find even some black people now is like, yeah, I don't really want to go anywhere. Like, you know, I want to save my money and, you know, and not spend money traveling and doing all this stuff. Like, what would you want to see more in our behavior as far as traveling goes?
To realize that travel can be the next city over. It can be the next state over. you don't have to spend a lot of money to go traveling. You know, Black people are still traveling the most to go see friends and family. That's a trip. That's traveling. You know what I mean? If you live in Louisiana and you're going, you know, to Illinois, that's a trip. And stop on your way to see certain monuments or to teach your grandkids or kids about different things. So I would love to see us travel. It doesn't have to be in a plane, you know, just to travel in general. Get on a train. Train still work. Get on a bus. Bus still work. My grandmama did it for years, you know. So it's just like explore the world, because there's so much for you to learn out there. There's so many communities to connect with out there. So that's what I would say. Explore as much as you can.
Thank you.
Even if it's your own city, even if it's your own city, there's Black history in your city you don't know about. Uncover that, you know? So.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And one last time, for those that are interested in getting your books, getting a hold of you contact-wise, social media, can you give us information on how to get to you?
Yep. It is Marty_San Diego, which I'm dropping in the chat, or Martinique Lewis. And then on Amazon, it's the ABC Travel Green Book, or you can go to abctravelgreenbook.com. And it's also Cheyenne and the ABC Travel Green Book, both on Amazon.
Yes, Cheyenne, ABC Travel Green Book, one of my daughter's favorite books right now. So dope book. Can't wait for the next one. When is the next one dropping?
That's a good question. We started actually working on it 3 weeks ago, but now it's just research, because the next one is Africa, and there's so many different African communities, and you know, I have 54 countries to pick from, and I'm like, who am I going to leave out without them being mad, right? But I'm like, I can only talk about 12 of them in the book, so I was trying to do a process of elimination. But also, one thing I realized on my travels is that my book did not tell stuff in detail like it should have, but it's because of the information that's available to me, right? So I learned more about Afro-Peruvian culture by being in Peru. It's nothing Google can tell you like the people in Peru can tell you. You see what I'm saying? So I'm like, do I need to visit these places first so I can make sure that my information is as accurate as possible? Because my information is accurate, but it also leaves out some things that are critical to these Black communities. And so, yeah, I'm like, all right, I have to start getting people on the ground so that I can say, is there anything that's really missing here? You know, because it tells a story. It weaves the story together. So, yeah, got a little bit more work to do.
Yeah, I cannot wait, man. I will be getting all five in the collection.
Thank you.
Indeed. And if you, listeners, anybody on, if you have kids, definitely expose them to Cheyenne and the ABC Travel Green Book so they can get a global Black perspective and view. Martinique, thank you for coming through. It's almost 1 a.m. in London right
thank
now, and you hung around with us. So appreciate your
thank
time.
You.
So,
absolutely.
Yes. Tons of information today. And listeners, if you are traveling to any places around the globe, I would definitely advise that you get the ABC Travel Green Book so you can be aware of the Black spaces, so you are not uncomfortable and, you know, people can tell you where to avoid being called monkey and all those, you know, things that we get when we travel. And you can be aware of the spaces too, like the spaces that don't take lightly or kindly to us. You know, we all had, you know, there's spaces like that in the United States, you know, the sundown towns and all that. So just like any place you go, you should know where to go, where not to go, you know. So definitely pick up the ABC Travel Green Book and check Martinique out. And I'm sure she would respond if you hit her up. You know, if you're going somewhere, she would let you know who's doing the tours and who's there that you can speak with. So connect. And of course, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I will see you next time on Mastermind.